Welcome back to Making It So. I'm your host, Craig, and my co-host, Maddie. How you going, buddy?
I'm here.
We're back for Season 5, Episode 3 of Star Trek Discovery, and this is our episode 25 that we've done of Making It So.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, this episode is called Janal.
Oh, was that one of the hosts? Is that where that title comes from?
Yes,
right,
absolutely. Yeah, the true host, but... Spoiler alert, before we go any further, if you haven't watched this episode, please go back and watch the episode before you listen to this, unless you want to be spoiled.
Maybe you're someone who doesn't actually want to watch Discovery, so you listen to these instead. And that's
I've actually had someone message me and say to me that he's not going to watch the episodes because he hates Discovery, but he wants to listen to what we say about it.
Maybe we're here
for that person.
Maybe we'll convince them to actually check it out.
This episode aired on April 11th. 2024. Obviously, Maddie and I have got a couple of episodes early through screeners for Paramount Plus, which is great. So this has allowed us to watch it earlier than everybody else. So obviously, we're releasing it on April 11th, so we don't spoil this for anybody out there.
We're recording it quite a while before that, and because of that, we don't have any synopsis for the episode yet.
Yeah, this episode is directed by Andy Armaganin.
Sure.
Okay. Like, why do all of these people have such horrible names of me to say? Why can't they? Like, Jonathan Frakes, not hard to say.
Well, these days now, it's like people don't have to have such plain stage names. Like, if I can remember people's names. Princess Amidala. Senator Amidala.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Natalie Portman.
Not her real name.
I didn't know that.
Her, like, Gershlag or something like that is her actual last name.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that, like, Slovenian or something?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
So back in the day, this particular director probably would have been told to change his last name to Smith or something like that. And he's like, nah, keeping my normal name.
Well, he spells his name or her, I don't know, Andy, A-N-D-I.
Okay, that could be female.
Don't know. Not sure.
This
episode, though, starts off...
Side note, Natalie Portman is Raleigh-born, so I'm guessing her...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Her and Gal Gadot just...
You learn new things every day, and there you go.
Hershlag is her last name. It's Hebrew.
Yep, okay, cool. I can see why she changed that for the American market.
Yep.
Yeah, or the Western market.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this episode starts off with a nice sweeping CGI shot of all the ships around... Yeah, Starfleet headquarters.
Like I said last week, just a bunch of ships just hanging around, not doing a lot.
Yeah, and how do you feel about the ship designs in this era?
Not a fan.
Like, we haven't spoken about it yet, but the detached nacelles.
Hate it.
How does that... I just don't understand the science behind that and how it works.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, if we tried to explain to our parents, and to be fair, I don't know, but it's like the way that we can just like put our phones down onto like a charging pad and it just starts charging it without having to plug it in. I don't understand how that works.
Look, in my mind now, the detached nacelles are just an extension of that.
Yeah, it's Wi-Fi. It's Wi-Fi. You know what I mean? They're Wi-Fi nacelles. Yeah, I don't understand it either. There was one horrible ship I saw. I don't know whether it was Rainer's ship or a different ship, but it was like... You know how the Discovery has like that outer ring?
Yes, I don't like that.
And then there's a hole and then there's the center part. There was another... Imagine if you took that whole center part out of the middle of the Sorcerer of Discovery and it was just that outside ring. There was a ship that looked like that.
So it was actually a toilet seat.
Yeah. Hated it. They're so ugly. And wasn't it when we were first introduced to the future, this future... Remember when we saw like the Voyager J or whatever it was, and the ship named after Nog as well? Was it just the Nog or was it the Eisenberg or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was the Eisenberg.
Yeah.
No, it was the Nog.
Was it the Nog?
USS Nog.
Weren't they like inside a starbase?
Weren't
they like...
Yeah, so it was like an energy shield barrier around it.
Right. Because I was like, now all these ships are kind of just hanging out.
Yeah, because...
Orbiting this weird spiral thing.
Yeah, weren't the ships providing the power to... I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was something along those lines.
It's the classic part of the episode, like of our episode of the podcast, where we didn't pay attention enough to the previous seasons of Discovery.
And we didn't do our research, didn't go back and rewatch them.
But yeah, just a lot of ships just hanging out, doing nothing. I also would have liked to have had a little bit, I guess it's not important information, but I also would have liked to have known what happened to Rayner's old ship. Was it given a new captain?
Number one now the captain? Or, you know, have they found a new captain for it? Like, what was his ship called? I can't remember. They would have told us, yeah.
Well, I guess with our screeners, we didn't have the opportunity to turn subtitles on, which is what I do a lot.
Yeah, and I was watching it on my laptop screen because I couldn't watch it on the
taking
TV
and stuff like that. Because, I would imagine...
And we only had a small amount of views that we were allowed to use.
I would imagine going forward at some point, surely the way this show is written, we're going to encounter that ship with its new captain, and that's going to be a point of contention for Rayner or something. Like, it's going to give him some kind of... conflict or, something or other moving forward.
Well, and at the end of last episode, Maddie and I were talking about having two captains on the ship. He got demoted.
Yeah.
He's a commander.
I mean, I like that.
Yeah, that is good.
The chain of command person in me goes, yes, good. Not a captain. But yeah, that's also obviously going to be a very big learning curve for him being the captain, taking a demotion and being a first officer to... someone like Michael, who he has such a different command style to.
Oh.
Which, like I said last week, I don't buy that any of them would agree to any of this.
So,
if it was in the real world.
He is very much sort of a micromanager type of commander. He likes to, from what I can see, tell his crew exactly how to do things, how it's going to be done. Mm. Whereas Michael, she gives her crew what is called mission command. So mission command is, and that's something that we use very much in the Australian Army. So even the lowest ranked soldier, as long as they know what the overall mission is, their part of the mission is up to them to execute the way they want to.
Yeah, it's right? Here is the objective. Do what you need to do to achieve that directive. Report back to
me. We are not going to tell you exactly how you are going to achieve it. You figure it out. Whereas... other nations that I've worked with in my military career, they don't have that. Like, even, like myself as an E7 sergeant, like if I was to work with like an E7 in another military, they would probably have to speak to their lieutenant or their captain or whatever and get exactly how they're to achieve this.
Yeah, Rayner.
Yeah, whereas I don't.
Rayner is very much walk down that hallway, take the second left, the third right. Knock on that door twice, say these exact words.
I know you
person.
Can get there by going right then left, but no, you're going left then right.
Yeah. He's very much like that. Yeah. No, I think micromanaging is a good way to put it.
Very much. And he's a grating character, but by the end of this episode, I kind of am starting to understand him a little bit more.
Yeah.
We're getting character development, which is good.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that's something Discovery has not done a lot of from, like, not Michael, like other characters. And Saru, they're the ones that have got character development.
I had a PTS moment here.
Oh, send it.
In that we were talking just last week about how we barely know anything about the rest of the bridge crew.
Yeah.
What are we introduced to in this episode? A bunch of other nameless faces on the bridge.
Yeah.
I'm like...
who's this guy?
where's Owo and Poor Man 7 of 9? Like, did they... are they... in my head, I'm going, are they costing too much now as recurring? So they specifically didn't put them in this episode. And
just
then
a different
just
shift.
Hired like this is the beta shift or the gamma shift. And I'm like, it's more nameless faces that we're not going to get involved with. But I think it was probably just so that there were some other faces that could rotate through Rayner's little weird introduction. But I was just like, oh God, I don't need more. I don't need more drones. But something... I have to ding Michael for in this episode and the writers by extension, given how open-minded the show is and how accepting it is of and how inclusive it is from everybody, like every standpoint, whether it be your...
it's 2024.
Yeah, your gender expression, your neurodivergent status, whatever it may be. Michael chose to say the phrase... connection isn't a skill, it's a choice. Now, that...
being able to connect with people is a skill.
It is a skill.
It's also a choice.
It's a choice, but then you have to... it's a choice to want to connect with someone. It's a skill to be able to connect with that person. And especially dealing with neurodivergent people, it's like a lot of neurodivergent people don't have the skill to actually make a connection with people. It's something they're lacking. Mm. So it's a very interesting phrase for Michael to put forward. It just sounded like the writer just writing some kind of thing to make it sound vaguely, you know, Vulcan idiom type kind of thing. But I'm like, no, she's just flat out wrong. Yes, Raina doesn't want to make a connection, but it is a skill to make a connection with people. It is both those things. You have to want to do it and you have to know how to do it. Ergo, it's a skill.
So Raina has read all of the crew's personnel files, but Michael orders him to spend one-on-one time with all of the crew members, which he does, but I don't think he does it the way that she intended. No. At all.
And given what we know about Riker and Kira and Chakotay, it's like, yeah, well, the first officer's main role is
crew management.
It's administration. It's duty rosters.
Yep.
It's admin work. It's keeping the ship running with all those little minute details that the captain shouldn't have to worry about because they're busy stopping the ship from exploding.
So I'm going to put it down to the relationship in a infantry platoon between the platoon commander and the platoon sergeant being the second in charge.
Yeah.
The platoon commander, tactics. Platoon sergeant, admin.
Yeah.
That's the same relationship with the captain of the ship and the first officer.
Yeah. I feel like
admin and tactics.
First officer is a really nice way of saying, you're the captain's receptionist, really. You know what I mean? And I guess for Raina, it's a weird thing because he now has to be that person. He had a first officer. And now he has to be that first officer.
Yeah, he fucked up and now he's being
demoted.
Yeah,
he's got a what's that?
Eat crow.
Yeah, and just cop it.
I can only imagine what crow tastes like with the amount of crap they eat. Be like eating a fox, yuck.
I did see a meme once where someone said, I reckon seagulls would taste delicious because they're basically just a chicken filled with hot chips.
They're like rats. They're sky rats of the ocean.
Yeah, but they live off.
Be like eating a pigeon.
But they live. Well, pigeons are a delicacy in France.
Ooh.
Seagulls live off hot chips. They'd have mashed potato ready to go.
Look, for those of us that live along the coast here in Australia, like, yeah, seagulls, pain in the ass. So at the end of the last episode, they got the next clue on their journey, I guess, to find the progenitors and what they've left. So this clue has taken them to Trill. Which is cool.
And of course Adira figured it out.
Yeah, of course. You know, because of her connection to Grey and, you know.
Well, she was a host.
She was a host, yeah. Which, you know, the first time a human person's been a host to a Trill.
I was very nervous because Trill is a very important planet to me.
Yeah, because of all the stuff in DS9.
Yeah. And I wasn't a huge fan of the Adira Grey stuff. Must've been season 3, season 4, whatever it was. When Grey left, I was like, oh, thank God we're going to leave all this stuff behind. Cause it was a little bit, so I was very nervous about going back to Trill again.
Do you remember Grey's a golem now as well? Golem
that's
body?
Right. Yep. Yeah, that's right. I always get confused too, because Grey's name is Grey. Adira is Adira, obviously, but the performer's name is Blue.
Yes.
But then Grey is Grey, but Grey has blue hair. And I always have to pause
so
for
confusing.
A second and go, wait, who's who again? Grey has, I think, like, Grey's had some really questionable, like, hairstyle choices. This might be the worst so far. It's like Grace kept the mullet, kept the weird little blue streaks, but just grown it out. And just the mullet's just cascading down the shoulders now. And I'm just like, that is not a good look.
So we get to Trill. And when we get there, Michael wants to beam down and she's told no. The crew is not allowed to come down until Guardian Z.
Yes.
Gives permission. And he's a character we'd met before in a previous season.
Actually, just before we beam down, there was a weird moment okay. where Michael and Book were talking and they're still in their awkward, are we dating, are we not, what are we doing, whatever. And I think what Book meant to say is that I need to join the away team to the planet. But the way it was written, he's just like, you need to take me to Trill. Well, he was always going to Trill because he's on the ship and he's part of the mission. But I think the phrase should have been, you know, I need to be part of the away team. I need to beam down. I need to, you know. But it was just some really weird, clunky writing where I as a viewer had to stop and go, why would you not be going to Trill? Oh, you mean you're going down to Trill? Like,
you need to be part of. Yeah. Well, that's his whole reason for being there.
Yeah, right. And again, Michael was the one that tapped him for this mission. She was the one that said, we need to go and pick him up. He's going to be really, really helpful here. So, why would she not want him to beam down? And at what point did she say he wasn't beaming?
He was always going to go.
Yeah, right. It just felt like a bit of a time filler to me.
So Guardian Z, he gives Michael a riddle. And what was it? Where does the fourth point? What was it? Anyway.
Something like that.
Yeah, it was something along those lines.
The fourth stanza of the poem that they found on the other planet. And then it pointed to Beta Z or whatever it was the answer.
The symbiote is still alive.
That's cool.
Yeah, like 800 years later.
Yeah.
So is this the oldest one that we've come across at this point?
Yeah, well, I guess the Dax symbiote was...
It was pretty
something
old.
Something like 300 years old.
Like... Jadzia, what was she? She was the, sixth or seventh host?
No, she was the eighth.
Eighth?
Originally, she was the seventh when we met her. Then we found out about Duran and she ended up being the eighth.
He was the serial killer one, wasn't he? Yes.
Yeah, which is... No, that wasn't the episode where we first do the Jintara, which is what they reference in this episode. Mm. The Jintara says. I just remember Ezri being... I always have to work backwards because remember Ezri was the ninth. Ezri was the ninth host.
So, and this is how we get the name of the episode, Janal. So that is the name of the symbiote, which, you know, we are essentially going there to see because, you know, they were alive when the progenitors were first discovered by Picard and his crew.
Yeah, that particular host of the symbiote.
They were doing research into it.
Was working with that Romulan body that we found. Holds the clue. And now obviously that's been passed down through
host, the generations.
Host to this little frail old lady who's... basically wants to die and she's just holding on and just being like, just let me rest. Come on.
So, and then we transfer the symbiote's consciousness into Dr. Culber for a time.
Yeah, via Jintara.
Which is cool. We've seen this before, haven't we?
Yeah, back in Facets in season 3 of DS9 when...
We're testing Maddie's knowledge now.
Sisko's mentor, who was the previous host Curzon? Of the Dax symbiote. Curzon, thank you. Curzon was transferred into Odo's body and they almost had their own blending version.
Yes, I remember that, yes.
Yeah. I love that episode. That was one of the first episodes I bought the VHS of DS9.
What did you think of the whole CGI and set for the caves? I thought it was cool.
It was cool.
It was updated from where we'd previously seen it.
Yeah, like I can't... Like the nostalgia part of me wants to go, oh, that's not what the Trill people wear in the caves. But it's like, it's been 800 years.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, fashion's changed and all that kind of stuff. It does get a little bit repetitive sometimes. I feel like they're using the sets from Strange New Worlds where it's like their version of the volume from Star Wars where it's just like... We've got a little bit of space in the middle here and we're standing in a giant sort of video CGI room. It looked okay. It looked fine.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool. That's something that Discovery has done very well through the years. Like their sets and their CGI. I've said it before. It just looks great.
I'll say the CGI is good. I'll say the sets, because I still hate the Discovery Bridge.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It does look rather large for a ship of its size.
Yes. Yeah, everything's just way too spaced out. But the performance of the Jintara, it didn't sound Trill to me, but that could just be the actor's choice.
Yeah, that's true.
I know there's a classic blooper from DS9 where when we first do a Jintara and it's a guest actor, he pronounces it correctly, the Jintara. And then in season 7, when Esri comes in and she performs one on herself so that she can access Duran to help solve a crime, obviously who was directing and managing the script and stuff didn't know about it. And like Esri pronounces it wrong. She pronounces it like Zion Tara or something like that. Oh. It's bad.
Awkward.
So that's why I'm like, well, I guess I've got to give this episode a pass in terms of that.
Saru's fiance, the president of Navarre, she brings him a nice little new plant for his office.
Mm.
So I thought that was nice. Like,
yeah.
She is Vulcan, but she uses words like love.
Yeah, well, obviously she's Navarre. She's Romulan. Like, it is interesting because she presents, like, she looks very Vulcan. You don't see a lot of Romulan in her, but I would imagine she has Romulan heritage, you know, somewhere in the last 800 years. So it is weird. I can see, like, hardcore Trek fans being like, that's not a Vulcan. They don't have feelings. They don't propose. And I'm like, well, yeah, she's not a Vulcan. She looks Vulcan, but she's a Navarre. So...
I like it. The reunification thing has been something that they've been trying.
Yeah.
They've been trying to do for many years.
Exactly.
I guess it has parallels in our own, you know, time here where they're trying to, you know, eventually they'd love to reunify North and South Korea.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, maybe that's what they were talking about all this time. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Just trying to neutralize
two people. That are of the same, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I think as viewers, I guess the hardest thing is where it's spoilt in a way, but also it can make it confusing. It's like we've got Discovery, we've got Strange New Worlds, we've got
Lower Decks,
we've got Prodigy, we've just finished Picard. And aside from like Picard and Lower Decks-ish, they all take place in different time frames.
Yeah.
So I can understand it being very difficult for someone visually who's used to seeing Vulcans act a certain way to then see this woman who presents very Vulcan not acting very Vulcan, but we just have to remember that she's not. The issue I had with her was that it was established for Saru to take his position as an ambassador. He had to resign his commission.
Yes.
Several times, I think... talking about, well, when she introduces him to her aide, and then when she...
Captain Saru.
Yes, and then when she reads out the engagement announcement, they both say Captain Saru when he's no longer a captain.
Yeah, like, shouldn't they say Ambassador Saru?
Right? I could understand if...
Worf.
I guess when you retire, like when you retire from the military, you're still going to hold whatever rank you had, but it's you're such and such retired, yeah. Right?
So I don't think I'm going to refer to myself as Sergeant Stratford forever.
No, no.
Back to Mr. Stratford.
Yeah. but it's not like Saru retired. He hung up his position of captain, handed it back, and said, give me the ambassador hat instead, and I'm going to put on my ambassador hat. So it is weird for in both instances to refer to him as captain.
And Saru, though, he's not just the ambassador for, like, his people either. He's... going to be the ambassador for like a group of planets so he can like be their voice to the Federation.
Yeah, which I thought was weird because I'm like, how if I lived on one of those planets, how would I feel about that?
Yeah, like
I'm just being assigned an ambassador who has probably never actually been, because I don't think they establish what group of planets he's speaking
for. No, they
for.
Didn't say.
So he wasn't elected. He was offered that position. So if I'm someone on those planets, I'm going to be like, what the fuck? Who is this guy and why is he speaking for me and my planet?
Like, remember when Worf became the ambassador to Kronos?
Yeah.
As well, like, in, you know, later on when he was not the ambassador, he'd gone back to Starfleet. So, he still held a rank, or was he given back the rank? I don't know. Like,
well, no, when he became an ambassador, he was still a lieutenant commander.
Mm.
So I would say at some point off screen, he's finished up his ambassadorship. Gone back to Starfleet as a lieutenant commander, served longer and promoted up to captain.
From being an ambassador going back to being a lieutenant commander? Like, you've got all this power even over like a Starfleet captain, really.
Yeah.
Like, and then going back to being a lieutenant commander.
Yeah. But it's also Worf. I mean, he could have been Chancellor, but he handed that to Martok.
That's true,
so
too.
Worf doesn't crave power, so he wouldn't have minded.
So Michael's ordered Rayner to do one-on-one talks with the crew. He gets Tilly and he tells her that he's going to give each crew member 5 minutes. And then he asks each crew member to tell him something about themselves that he wouldn't know from reading their personnel file.
You're forgetting, in 20 words or less.
In 20 words or less. Like,
that. He did.
He's a dick.
Didn't even give them a minute. He's like, I'll give them each 5 minutes. They didn't even get a minute with him.
Like, Jet Reno, I like her. She's cool.
Yeah, I have this weird love-hate relationship with Tignataro. So it's, yeah, sometimes I'm like, yeah, Jet's great. And other times I'm like, calm down. There's a time and a place.
Yeah, she's very matter-of-fact, very just tell it how it is. And I like that. I definitely relate to that.
There's no peril when Jet's around too. I think it was prior to this I rewatched like the last episode of season 4. And it's like, her and Book are trapped on his ship behind a force field and they're about to die. And she's like, oh, I could really use a sandwich. Like, just takes all peril out of any moment she's in.
So, yeah, as I said, Tilly chaperones Rayner, but Tilly also, she gives it to Rayner a little bit.
Yeah.
In this, she gives him a bit of attitude and sort of tries to set him straight a bit.
I did like early on where she goes, permission to speak freely, then says a bit. And he's like, I didn't actually give you permission. I'm like, good call. And then later on, she's just like, I don't care. I'm going to tell you you're a piece of shit.
But later on in the episode as well, like Michael sort of brings that little bit of the conversation full circle because she expects that her crew will speak freely because everybody's got a part to play. Everybody has an idea, and that's how she likes to command, by using her crew to her advantage to, you know, because she can't think of everything.
Yeah.
Whereas Rayner.
But also, it's a little bit of a unfair equivalency because it's like season one, Michael Burnham didn't trust anybody, wasn't trusted by anybody. She was the only one who
she was the outsider.
Yeah, she was the only one who was ever right. Everyone else was always wrong. She was always right. It didn't matter what it was. She didn't take any advice from other people. So it does go to show how far Michael as a character has grown.
Like the character development of Michael Burnham has been huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Which absolutely is good. And I like that about the character as well.
Yeah, can you imagine like season one Michael being in the captain's chair right now? It would just be, everyone would be on edge.
Mm.
People would be like, no, bring back Lorca. He was actually less psychotic.
Even though, yeah.
So she has all this, you know, 5 years worth of experience with all these people and has grown with them. Granted, we as an audience haven't seen any of that. It's all happened off screen because we don't know any of these characters. Rayner is is starting from scratch, having to get to know these people, and he's got no interest in doing it.
Mm. Mm. Very awkward for Adir and Grey when they hug down on the planet. Like, is it time we just move past these two?
I hope so. That breakup, quote unquote breakup, I'm using air quotes, was bullshit. Some of the worst.
It was weird.
Some of the worst writing this show has ever had. So I've broken.
Fuck, that's a big call, Maddie.
Right. It didn't make any sense. Okay, so they both acknowledge that things are weird between them. Adira says, well, I can apply for more leave or I can transfer off Discovery so that we can spend more time together. And Gray's like, no, I don't want you to do that for me. I wouldn't expect you to do that for me and I hope you wouldn't expect me to do that for you. Also, Gray, he's like, well, there are other types of relationships and we can explore and find a way to make this work. And then Adira's like, well, I don't know how to do it differently, so I guess we have to break up. Adira started the conversation by saying, what if I transferred? What if I took more leave to spend more time together?
It's like she hadn't fully thought about what she wanted to do for the relationship. Or probably in the case of this, the writers didn't know. They, yes.
Adira goes by they. Yeah, it just felt like the writers going, we're going to split these two up and we're just going to write some gobbledygook and hope people believe it. Because that their motivation didn't make, neither of their motivations made sense in that moment. Adira's like, what can I do to make it work? Gray's like, don't do that, but there's other ways we can do it. And before, and Gray didn't even put out any suggestions. Gray just said, there's other kinds of relationships. And Adira went, well, I don't know how to do that, so are we breaking up?
It's all a little bit weird. Their whole relationship, their whole dynamic has always been a bit weird. Yeah. Like, because he was inside her as, you know.
He was inside them.
Yes. Like, he was, well, I see what I see. I'm going to say what I see.
Respect their pronouns.
You are not going to change me.
Respect their pronouns.
Right. Gray still, yeah, is Gray a he?
Yes, Gray is a trans masculine, I believe.
He's still got his weird emo blue hair.
Yeah, but grown out and looks terrible.
Like,
Just think if they were two people of their actual real life ages, I would buy that bullshit.
What are their real life ages?
You know, early 20s. Okay. You know what I mean? You know, late teens, early. You know, inexperienced in love, inexperienced in life. A silly conversation like that would make sense. Adira has been the host to a true symbiont. I feel like they would have a little more perspective on life and experience. And, oh, that's right. Gray was one of those previous hosts of the same symbiont. So they should know each other better than anyone. So it just, I didn't buy any of it. It was terrible. Between their shitty breakup and Michael and Book's shitty breakup, I'm just like, what are these people doing? None of them know how to communicate with other
people. It's almost like the writers of the show live in their mum's basement and don't know relationships.
Yeah, it's like they've never been in a relationship. It's like they're writing something they don't know.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we assume this is how two people would break up.
They're like, Mom, bring me some meatloaf. Anyway.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
In this episode, they actually mention what year it is as well. So it is 3191.
That's right, because there was that vague reference in the first episode of the season where they're like, they're celebrating the millennial whatever it is of the creation of the Federation, but they're like, oh, but, you know, give or take 20 years because of the burn or whatever. Which was, that was a stretch.
Yeah, very much so.
And then, yeah, they actually give the exact year.
So Dr. Culber has Janal in him now. And instead of just transporting to where the clue is, he's like, we're going on a long walk.
Yeah.
That's just fucking annoying.
Like, I did like the way, I forget the actor's name, but the guy that plays Culber, he did a really good job distinguishing Janal from Culber.
Oh, yeah, like definitely.
He did a really good job.
Like, good acting.
Yeah, yeah, just demeanor changed, much more casual. I think probably from an actor's point of view, opening up the jacket and, you know, and making a comment about how it was a bit too stuffy, I think probably helped him get into the character of Janal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was quite well done.
So Saru, he's running a meeting of the Federation Council for more patrols in certain systems, which I'm guessing they're the systems that he is now the ambassador for. Mm. So he's got to, you know, speak for them, which is cool. Like,
people he's never met.
He's just jumped straight into the job, though.
Yeah.
You know, there's... And he's a likable person.
Saru,
yeah. He's very likable. Like, I like his character.
Yeah.
He's engaging and he's different as well to what we've seen in Star Trek before.
Like, I believe stuff what he says. Like, he's confident in what he says.
I believe that everything that Saru does, he's doing for the greater good.
Yes.
And he's doing absolutely. It for the betterment of everyone.
Yeah.
He doesn't do anything just for himself, really.
Yeah, there's not a selfish bone in that body.
No, he's great.
Assuming he has bones at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd hope so with those giant long bloody legs he has. So anyway, so the president's aide of Navarre questions Saru about releasing, their engagement statement. Yes. So obviously that aide had already spoken to the president of Navarre and she'd said, hey, look, we're going to release it anyway. And then he's gone, I'm going to play mum off against dad and goes to Saru and convinces him to tell her to not release it.
Yeah.
But then I like it how when Saru does speak to her about it, she explains her position to Saru, and Saru's like, oh, that basically makes sense. Let's just do it.
Yeah, of all the relationships we're seeing this episode,
this is a strong relationship.
They have the most healthy relationship, yes. Open communication. When she says that thing about, well, it would be worse if we didn't tell people. And I hadn't thought of that. I was like, oh, yeah, of course. She's just being, you know, open and out there, which is really, really good. There's a part of me, like, if this was still Discovery in the past, or if this was done in the 2370s, I'd just be like, ew, no. Like, people wouldn't get caught up in the optics, you know, and the spin, the political spin that the aide is talking about, and how it looks like mankind has progressed past that. But
I feel like mankind,
being that it's in
a post-burn scenario, yes,
where society has broken down, fucking Earth left the Federation, all that kind of stuff, I feel like all these petty squabbles make sense.
Yeah, like post-burn, like the burn was, for lack of a better word, an apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, like it, all these hundreds of planets that are part of the UFP and all the other like factions out there, and the Klingons and all of that sort of stuff. And like they were essentially on their own.
Yeah.
For, you know, 100 years.
And it just reinforces that Discovery never should have been set in the past in the first place. By putting it so far in the future and giving it its own, you know, open ending, they can tell these kinds of stories without people going, that goes against canon, that doesn't... It's like, well, no, we're 800 years in the future after an apocalypse. It's a free-for-all. This is Star Trek after The Walking Dead. You know what I mean?
That's funny considering Sonequa Martin. Yeah, great, right? She was in The Walking Dead. But, like, I honestly believe that the plan for Discovery to begin with never included the 32nd century.
No, that was two showrunners.
Yeah, ago. And they were like, we need to do something to, you know, essentially unfuck this situation that they've got themselves into.
They had a showrunner for season one who did all that Mirror Universe stuff, got fired. Then they had the duo, the man and woman, that did season two and helped course correct a little bit. But then apparently they were absolute nightmares, and there were some allegations made against them for, you know, the workplace was really toxic. They got the boot, and then I believe 3, 4, and 5 have been kind of the same creative team. They were the ones that said, okay, we got to get the fuck out of here. We got to, you know, we're heading to the future, which is what all the fan have been saying early on. Unless you're going to do we as you know, kids of the 80s and 90s, we enjoy Strange New Worlds, but
yeah.
I know there's a lot of people who grew up in the 60s and 70s with original Trek aren't fans. They don't like Strange New Worlds because they can't see that ship becoming the ship they saw made out of cardboard when they were a kid. So I get that. So I think it was the same thing with Discovery. Is it's like we saw that and went, that ship does not belong in that time period.
No.
It does belong in the future where it is now. I would believe it. If the show had started with the burn, I would absolutely believe everything that was happening. So, yeah, it makes much more sense to be where it is now.
Anyway, so Doc Culber as Janal leads them down into the valley to find the next part of the puzzle.
Space bugs. Invisible space bugs.
Yeah.
Giant invisible space bugs.
Three times book's height.
Yeah, which I feel like the height was the least important thing about those.
Yes.
Three times his height, 300 times his mass.
Yeah easily.
Those things were huge. Like,
have we ever seen these on Trill before? Have we ever heard of them? I'm sure we may have.
No, we've only ever been to Trill, I want to say, twice.
I feel like it's something that Deanna may have mentioned these bugs. Things before, these bug beasts. I feel like she may have mentioned them. I'm not sure though. I just don't know where she would have mentioned them. But
Deanna?
The fact, yeah. Did I say Deanna?
Yeah, you said Deanna.
Yeah.
Do you mean Jadzia?
Not Jad. Yeah, sorry, Jadzia. Why did I say Deanna?
No. There's been no mention of these in Deep Space Nine. There's been references to like how Trill is quite purple, like the oceans don't have enough purple in them or whatever it was. There's been no mention of these giant like moth, invisible moth creatures or anything like that.
And the fact that they can cloak.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is kind of cool.
Yeah. It was funny. During that whole exchange, I was going, something's not right here, because I'm going, well, Culber walked off, Janelle walked off. At no point did Michael or Book fire a single shot at one of those creatures. Not even a stun. Not even to see if a stun worked. And I was like...
She didn't want to hurt them, did she?
Yeah, but a stun. If a bear is coming at you, I don't want to kill the bear.
Oh, no.
But if I've got a magical weapon in my pocket that can make something unconscious without killing it, I'm going to use it. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not going to set it... So it's like, at no point did they even have the conversation about set to stun... And
well, Book tried to communicate with it too.
Yeah, they're not. It's a two-way street. They're not open to communication. But it's like they didn't even try to stun the creature. But then it kind of made sense at the end when you find out it was a test from Janelle, and it was like, okay, all right, yeah, I kind of get it, but it doesn't quite
to make sure
sense.
That they're worthy.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't quite make sense that they wouldn't at least try. Like, even if they would just tried to stun it and stun didn't work, and then Michael said, well, I don't want to kill it. They're just protecting their young or whatever, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I just think when you've got a giant cloaked moth that's spitting fire barbs at you or that are melting acid or whatever, just try and stun it.
So during this whole thing where Michael and Book are dealing with these beasts, right? Michael said something about going on three, and then Book was like,
yes.
On three or after or three?
1, 2, 3, go.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, go. That, to me, every time I hear that sort of thing, it takes me back to Lethal Weapon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so with Riggs and Murtaugh, where they're like, on three, go, or 1, 2, 3, and go on three. Like, it's a running joke through all the Lethal Weapon movies.
Right. I've seen that in a lot of other things as well.
It always takes me to Lethal Weapon every time. Fun. I thought that was good. I thought it was fun.
It was a fun little moment. And then she's like, 1, 2, 3, go. And then she goes, okay, what? And then he just goes on one.
And then later on, after Book gets like barbed in the leg from one of those things, she's like, on three, we'll rip out the barb. Oh, and she rips it out on one. And he's like, I thought you said on three.
That's right.
I thought it was good. It was fun.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good moment.
Yeah, where are we? So, right, Rain is interviewing more of the crew on the ship as well.
More of the faceless or nameless faces.
Yeah, and it does play in later in the next episode.
Yeah.
So, we won't talk about that at the moment, but there's more to Rainer than what we probably realize at this point. And I think we're going to get character growth from this guy as the season goes on. Yeah. So
I did like the moment with the 1, 2, 3 sort of reminded you of Lethal Weapon. The moment where Tilly like has finally had enough
and she
unloads on Rainer, but she does it in 20 words or less.
Yes. And then she goes 21, wasn't it?
No, 21 would have been bastard or whatever, prick or whatever she was going to say. It just reminded me, and I forget the setup of it, but there's a great scene from Buffy the Vampire Slayer where like Spike's hanging around or whatever. I think she might say to him, what are you doing here outside my house? And say it in 5 words or less. And he just goes, out for a walk, bitch. And that like counts that on his hand. And that was my moment that reminded me of something else.
So yeah, after that, so Book tries to connect with the beasts or the animals, whatever they are again, and it works.
Yeah, it works.
So because they figure out that they're just trying to protect their young because there's eggs there.
Yeah.
So once they are able to connect with them and essentially go, look, we're not a threat to you.
Yeah.
They communicate with them and they let them go.
It was a little bit of a reach that a giant invisible space bug that spits acid, fire, pellet things can... Like, Burnham can just walk out with her head down and her palms open and a bug is going to go, oh, yeah, that means they're being nice.
Yeah, that'd be like going against a grizzly bear and doing that. Hey, guess what? I'm no threat to you. And next thing, you're dead.
I mean, I guess you could argue that maybe these things are used to the Trill. Like, they've had experience with humanoids via the Trill and stuff like that. But I'm like, it was a little bit of a stretch that it, you know, she was able to put away her magic phaser. And they went, oh, no, that's fine then. You're fine. If you've put away this little thing that would be the size of my toenail, you've put that away. The thing that, by the way, you've never actually fired at me that I'm perceiving as a threat. You've put that away, so now I'm open to being peace with you.
Yeah, they seemed like they were just working off instinct, these things, and then all of a sudden they had a bit more to them.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I would have believed it a little bit more if they had actually fired at the bugs a couple of times and they just shook it off. You know, they had it on stun and it didn't affect them.
Or, you know, fired at the rocks next to them to make something.
Something,
but they didn't. So,
So it was a little unbelievable for Michael to say, oh, now that my face is away, they see that I'm being peaceful. And then suddenly they're open to book communicating.
Anyway, so that was part of, was it Janal's test, Dr. Kolber there?
Yeah.
And
it was a red herring.
Yeah, little did they know that the next part of the map was not where they were with those beasts anyway. He'd gone back to, you know, that point anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then he gave them the next part.
Yeah.
Which was underneath the rock he was laying on.
Yeah. Now, the sweaty Deep Space Nine fan in me.
Oh, here we go.
Just wants to bring a little something up that they may have forgotten when writing this episode. Obviously, later on when they're all chilling out in the bar later on and Kolber's talking about his experiences in the Gintara and all that kind of stuff, they may have forgotten the fact that part of the Gintara is the fact that the host can take back control at any moment. The host has to let them, like, has to give in to the experience to let the previous host, you know, take over their body.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there's a point where Quark is, like, as one of the previous hosts is, like, brushing Jadzia's hair. And then the previous host goes, the entity I'm possessing wishes to speak. And then, like, let's go. And then Quark comes back. He's like, how much longer is this going to take? Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, bloody hell.
So the hosts can take control whenever they want. So there's a part of me that goes, well, does Kolber have access to Janal's memories? And wouldn't Kolber be able to know that, oh, it's just a test and he's faking it. I know where the thing is. So you guys don't have to die by invisible space moth.
Kolber's just like, eh.
He's like, whatever.
We're going to test the captain.
So, yeah, little bit of a hiccup there in the writing. And maybe they need to go back and watch Facets one more time before they finish.
Yeah, and we've said it before, Matty. Like, you know, even when it comes down to, you know, other shows like Stargate, they really need to hire a couple of people, you know, like yourself or me, that know these things to go, look, you're doing it wrong. Go back, watch this episode before you write anymore.
Yeah.
And then change things.
Because this is and it's like, that's what the fandom is going to do. They're going to have that conversation. So you need to cross your T's and dot your I's.
Yeah. Alex Kurtzman is not the guy. So I'll leave it on that. So Raina joins Tilly in the bar at the end there. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of a softer side of Raina, potentially.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting a little bit of growth as we go through the episodes, which is good to see.
Yeah, it's good. Episode 3, you know, he's already kind of rolling with the punches a little bit more and figuring stuff out. So, and I think he respected Tilly for standing up to him like that and, like, having a go at him.
So now that we've got the next part of the map to find the progenitors or whatever technology the progenitors have left behind.
Yep.
The crew of Discovery get a little bit of a break while the diplomats clear the way for the next jump.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, it's not the Federation that we're used to with the, you know, 24th, 25th sort of century area. Yeah. And there's a little bit more political tension between members, you know, member worlds at this point, or potential member worlds.
But then in the other little nugget at the end of the episode is we encounter our second invisible space bug for the episode, which is, it looks as though the old lady that was holding the Janal symbiote can finally let go and she's passed away.
Yes.
I thought the symbiote might go with them, but no, they put the symbiote back into the pool and it swims off, woo-woo, which is fantastic. But then we realize that
Mole was there the whole time. Yeah,
and she plants this little thing on Adira.
Yes.
This little bug.
Yeah, and what that is at this point, we just don't know. Like, you know, is it a literal, like it looked like a bug. Is it a bug that's going to listen to things? We don't know at this point. So
yeah, but it kind of looked like it was a liquid metal Terminator, but made out of glass or something.
Yeah,
it was like something weird. So, so yeah, that whole time when you know they were like,
how did Mole infiltrate? Like I'm picking that that's a very secure sort of a cave system.
Surely,
like that's like very religious, I guess. You know, for lack of a better word, to the Trill.
Absolutely.
So a sacred area, and she's managed to infiltrate her way in there, like quite easily, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and like I didn't get the vibe that, like when we tried to beam down at the start of the episode and the Trill said no, I get the vibe that we could have beamed down if we wanted to. Like there wasn't anything stop. There wasn't like a barrier or a force field stopping us from beaming in. It's just we were just following the rules and they were saying, no, you don't have permission yet. So, yeah, maybe she was able to just beam in and no one noticed. But there was a line, wasn't there, that Guardian Z said, oh, yes, you know, Trill security will handle that or, you know, whatever it was. So they have their own security force, but she was able to sneak by it just by putting on one of the Guardian robes and,
All right, well, that's the end of, was it season 5, episode 3 of Discovery, Janal. Yeah. The next episode is called Face the Strange. Yeah, that'll be our episode 26 for making it so.
Hey, facing the strange is a choice, not a skill.
Any final thoughts on that episode though, Matty?
Look, they didn't screw over Trill as bad as I thought they would. So
no.
I'm glad by that.
Yeah, no, like, because like the Trill and they're very special to DS9 fans, especially.
Trill and Bajorans hold a very special place in my heart.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna do it, I'm gonna be, and you don't get it right, I'm gonna be critical. Because so.
there is such a deep backstory that we already know from the Trill.
Yes.
Yeah, through Jadzia and Ezri and Curzon and all those others.
Yeah.
Like you can't screw that up.
No, absolutely. Like,
because
not.
You will upset the fans.
There's an entire universe of planets to go to that have less backstory that you've got more bandwidth to go through. You didn't have to go.
Yeah, like
to that
you've given yourselves very tight arcs to work within here.
Yeah.
And they didn't really screw it up.
No.
So I'm pretty happy with what they did there.
Yeah, me too.
So anyway, Matty, where can we find you on socials, mate?
On Instagram, at HighPitchMatty, HighPitchMatty.
Oh, he's nailed it again.
I had to think about it for a second.
And you can find myself on Instagram and Facebook at GeekInCamo. All right, until next week when we have Season 5, Episode 4, Face the Strange. Catch us later.
Bye.
Like when it was Picard, we'd finish with Picard. We finish with Disco? I don't know.
STD.
Whoop, whoop. Get into geek.